All right, so what we're going to do today, which is a little different, since last Sunday we lit the candle, had to do with prophets, okay? Today we'll do angels, but prophets. What we're going to do, so if you got your trusty, dusty cell phones, you need to have them ready if you don't have really good recollection, okay? I want you to find a passage that speaks to you prophetically about the coming of Jesus. And I want you to explain a little bit of what it foretells. How about that? So everybody's going to have a passage. So everybody needs to find one, whether it's you use your trusty dusty cell phone to help you, or whether you know a passage and it's just right there on the tip of your tongue. I want you to come up with a passage that in some way speaks to the coming, the first coming of Jesus. Maybe even the second, but definitely the first. Can you do that? So find one. So obviously the pond we're fishing in is the Old Testament, right? And it doesn't have to necessarily be prophetic about the birth of Jesus, just prophetic about Jesus, okay? So I'm going to read. So if you're going to pick Isaiah 53, go find something else, because that's what I'm going to read, okay? Sorry, Carol. Keep looking. All right. So Isaiah in chapter 53 says, "Who has believed our message, and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? He grew up before him like a tender shoot, and like a root out of dry ground. He had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him, nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows and familiar with suffering. Like one from whom men hide their faces, he was despised and we esteemed him not. Surely he took our infirmities upon and carried our sorrows, yet we considered him stricken by God, smitten by him and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions, he was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was upon him, and by his wounds we are healed. We all, like sheep, have gone astray. Each of us has turned his own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed and afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter, and as sheep before her shearers is silent, so he did not open his mouth. By oppression and judgment he was taken away, and who can speak of his descendants? For he was cut off from the land of the living. For the transgression of my people he was stricken. He was assigned a grave with the wicked and with the rich in his death. Though he had done no violence, nor was any deceit in his mouth. Yet it was the Lord's will to crush him and to cause him to suffer. And though the Lord makes his life a guilt offering, he will see his offspring and prolong his days, and the will of the Lord will prosper in his hand. After the suffering of his soul, he will see the light of life and be satisfied. By his knowledge, my righteous servant will justify many, and he will bear their iniquities. Therefore, I will give him a portion among the great, and he will divide the spoils with the strong, because he poured out his life unto death, and was numbered with transgressors. For he bore the sin of many and made intercession for the transgressors." Isaiah 53. The prophecy that explained who and what and why Jesus would come. I'll let you, when you have your passage, let me, just wave at me and we'll let you go. So we have the prophecy of the child coming, a child to be born, that he would be unique, that he would be divine in his nature, that he would come and somehow God would be actually with us. And he was literally And he still is, literally, by his Spirit. And that what we're reading there in Isaiah tells us about that truth. Somebody else. And he folded in the Isaiah, another passage from Isaiah, that indicated that it was actually being fulfilled. The idea of, you know, preparing a way. And that was what John saw his role as being. Somebody else. That's in very early. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. That was, yeah. Well, here it is. Let's see. It's in the Adam and Eve come to Jesus moment with him whenever they were talking to God the Father. We'll call it that. Okay. Said, the woman said, the serpent deceived me and I ate. The serpent deceived me and I ate. So the Lord God said to the serpent, because you've done this, cursed are you above all livestock and all the wild animals. You will crawl on your belly and you will eat dust all the days of your life. And I'll put enmity between you and the woman and between your offspring and hers. And he will crush your head and you will strike his heel. And to the woman he said, I will greatly increase your pains in childbirth. The pain you will be given, the pain you will give birth to children, with the pain you will give birth to children. Your desire will be for your husband, and he will be ruler over you. And Adam, he said, because you listened to your wife and ate from the tree about which I commanded you, you must not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. Through painful toil you will eat of it all the days of your life. It will produce thorns and thistles. And you will eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your brow you will eat your food until you return to the ground, since you were taken from it. The dust you are, and to the dust you return. And there's somewhere in there where it talks about the seed, and I cannot remember. Maybe it's just a different version than I have read. Gail and Anthony, we're finding prophetic passages about Jesus, whether it be of his birth or whether it be about who he was. So I start out with Isaiah 53. We've had several Isaiah passages. So, 3:15 in Genesis. I don't think I did. 3:15. From the beginning, he was the architect of all that is, and everything that was made for him by him. Anybody want to? I'll cheat. I've got the New Testament. How about that? Yes, I'm telling you to use your phones. Whatever it takes. Micah chapter 5, verse 2 says, but you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, though you are small among the clans of Judah, out of you will come for me one who will be ruler over Israel, whose origins are from of old, from ancient times. Therefore, Israel will be abandoned until the time when she who is in labor gives birth, and the rest of his brothers return to join the Israelites. He will stand and shepherd his flock in the strength of the Lord, in the majesty of the name of the Lord his God, and they will live securely. For then his greatness will reach to the ends of the earth, and he will be their peace. Funny how that star thing popped in there, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Other than counting, right? All those census reports. Jeremiah 31:15. This is what the Lord says. A voice is heard in Ramah, mourning and great weeping, Rachel weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted because her children are no more. Which had to do with Herod sending troops to kill the children in the area around Bethlehem. Zechariah 9, read that for us. Triumphal entry. Prophetic of the triumphal entry. There's even content in Psalms. If you go to Psalm 16, verses 8 through 11, it says, I have set the Lord always before me because he is at my right hand. I will not be shaken. Therefore, my heart is glad and my tongue rejoices. My body will also rest secure because you will not abandon me to decay, to abandon me to the grave, nor will you let your Holy One see decay. You have made known to me the path of life. You will fill me with joy in your presence and eternal pleasures at your right hand. That's as if it was Jesus' voice saying that. Okay, read that for us, Carol. From one from among us is like us, which is what he came to be, even though he was God, which is what he did. So a pre-incarnate, kind of like when the fourth man in the fire, in the fiery furnace. I understand. Yeah. What was revealed to them? So, some of those things you're right, we won't know. You know, one of those things that you can think about, meditate on here and there. Anytime you ever hear those voices of objection that want to do the best they can to somehow throw in doubt into your mind about all this, why would Herod kill children of a particular age, something that was historically written down and recorded at that time? Had the events that were recorded in the Gospels not actually been, I mean, it's just one of those, you can't explain away the coincidence after coincidence after coincidence when you have the prophecy after prophecy after prophecy. I mean, you know, what were the purpose of the prophecies for us? Okay, think about where we are in the time frame. So what is the purpose of all these prophecies about the coming of Christ? What are we supposed to do with that? That word preparation, that's kind of one of our words that we keep coming back to. I mean, John's purpose, Jesus' cousin, his purpose from birth was to be one who prepared. And he fulfilled that prophecy of being the one who was going to make the rocky places smooth, and the valleys he was going to make traversable. Okay, that is sort of what we're supposed to do. That's what John was supposed to do to make the way for Jesus. And then here we are in this time, and we are supposed to be doing somewhat the same thing. We're supposed to be removing the obstacles, getting people past the hurdles, to where they can be ready to receive what God is doing. I'm going to play on something here, forgive me. You hear us, you hear our politicians talking about infrastructure, okay? And that improving our infrastructure is going to make all the difference. Well, improving, and the reality is, no matter how much we improve all of these temporal things that are a part of the world, they never deal with the spiritual infrastructure in people's hearts. And that until people's hearts change, people's behaviors don't change. They keep doing the same thing. Several years ago, one of the reading topics that I had my students do at Savannah State was about education and looking at education. And one of the articles, essentially, the point was that if you look at education and people who just want to promote education as the solution to all human ills, then you have to look at some places like Columbine and others where something went desperately wrong. If it really is all about education, and that's all there is. The reality is we're educating people to be better mass murderers. You know, we make them smarter, better, we fill them with ideas, and then we expect them to be different, but they're not, because that's not the purpose of education. Does this make sense? It's a heart issue, heart matter. And so we have to be changed, and people have to be changed. for anything to change. Yes and no. So what was one of the most seminal moments in history was when somebody actually decided they were going to write a Bible in a that people could read and understand. So you've got, you know, the Gutenberg Bible, which was a Bible for the people. Okay. They didn't have to depend upon priests who knew Latin to translate everything for them. So I think that goes right along with, you know, what you're saying there, Jay. Yeah. Anthony. People that you and I interact with claim to want to be I don't want to use the word intellectual, but they want to claim to be basing things on reason and fact and stuff like that. Okay. And then they want to dismiss all the remarkable exponential probabilities that all these things that we embrace by faith that actually do have a whole lot of exponential reality behind it. You know what I mean? The chances of that many things being fulfilled in one life is just about impossible. All the things, just the small smattering of prophecies that we read this morning to be fulfilled by in the life of one person. The odds are just like impossible to overcome. But it's easy to throw that out for a lot of people. They're not thinking about that. And it's kind of the state. It's it goes back to the human heart. You know, there's a will not to. You know, it goes back to don't laugh at this, but I think I've told you whenever Luke was little, okay, one of the first things he would, whenever he didn't hear something he liked, he would say, "Tell me no. Tell me no." That's sort of the attitude of a lot of people in the world. Tell me there's an authority over my life. Tell me that what I'm doing is wrong. Tell me that I have to be different. Now, they don't understand that what that really means is all you got to do is die. Die to yourself. Take up your cross. It's just a matter of just giving up. Not being the one who's in charge and submitting to somebody else's authority, God's authority, the authority of Jesus, which we've also been talking about at 11 o'clock. So is there another passage somewhere out there that you want to read and talk about? Did you do Zechariah 12? No, we didn't. Where's that? What's that? Okay, here's another one. You wouldn't think in Numbers, and here's Leviticus. Let's go 17:11, you said, Russell? Okay, 17:11. Can you read that for us? And if you look in, I've said this to you too. If you look in Hebrews, and you see what the writer to Hebrews, how he interpreted who Jesus was and his position as the high priest, and that there was a heavenly temple that Jesus as the high priest entered into and made the sacrifice of himself. And that then was something that you couldn't put your hands on, but yet it was real. That there's a real temple, and that essentially every temple that's here is just an image or a symbol of the real temple. Does that make sense? My philosophy buddy across the hallway from me says, "That's Greek." He said, that's Platonistic. I said, "Well, okay. I can live with Plato getting a little bit of revelation and not understanding all of it. I'm cool." Okay, anything else? One more. Seems like there's one more. I don't know what it is. I did that, yes. No, we didn't. Not today. What is that? 19. Okay. Job 19:23 through 27. Oh, that my words were recorded, that they were written on a scroll, which is kind of funny because they were. That they were inscribed with an iron tool on lead, or engraved in rock forever. I know that my Redeemer lives, and in the end he will stand upon the earth. And after my skin has been destroyed, yet in my flesh I will see God. There will be a day. I guess one that is sticking in my mind, and I can't recall where it is, but there is one in one of the lesser prophets, and I'm not sure why I'm not remembering this well. I did the Micah 5:2. It was like, if it was Joel. It is going to bother me that I can't remember what it is. I'll just have to be patient and say I can't find it for now. And whenever I do, I'll have to share it with you. All right. One of the things that I want you to get from today in an odd way is that sometimes it is good for us to have to listen and meditate and search on our own. And that, not to say that you don't do that on your own, but I want this to be an object lesson to you about the fact that you can do this and should be doing this on your own anyway. And that when we do it together, there's nothing wrong with that. Everything that we do whenever we gather to worship doesn't have to be prepackaged for you. Okay? So today was not prepackaged. And I'm not sure exactly yet where I'm going to go at 9:30 next week. I'll try to let you know when I have an idea, if I have an idea. But today I just felt like this was what we were supposed to be doing. We were supposed to be talking about God's plan and what He's done and how He's spoken beforehand. Just like today at 11, we'll be talking about finishing this idea of God wanting to do a work in us, a new work in us. And so we'll finish waking the dead at 11. But we'll talk about angels a little bit too, for fun. All right. Brian, would you close us in prayer?